What we're dealing with here is a total lack of respect for the law.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
You are listening to Shadow Resistance Radio.
Hell yeah, folks. Shadow Resistance Radio, streaming live on February 28th, 2010 at 7:54 p.m. We wanted to get a little bit of an early start. I've got none other than Doug Kendall on the line, singer from Downcount, band extraordinaire. This place, these guys are amazing. Welcome, Doug. Appreciate you joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Just want to, you know, talk to you tonight about, you know, just a few things about, well, obviously, the themes of your songs fit in really well with all of the things I talk about here on this show. And as soon as I heard your first couple of songs, I went to your website and checked out the embedded player. I was blown away, man. Your sound is amazing.
Well, thank you. I have to tell you, I really appreciate all the nice things you've said about us. That is just great. I really appreciate that. I'm glad you're really digging the music, because you are the type of person that we wrote this music for.
Oh, absolutely.
So people can have an alternative to all the corporate stuff that's out there and the social engineering. This is a new type of music for people who get it.
Exactly.
And to share with other people who haven't quite gotten it yet.
Well, yeah, you know, and you see, it's like your music is a great tool, too, for trying to wake a few people up, open their eyes, and get them to see what's really going on around us. You know, I don't know, it was probably a few months ago when I heard Sons of Liberty, their band came out with a new album along, you know, a lot of good themes, a lot of great music, and I enjoyed it very much, but I gotta say, as soon as I heard your sound, you know, just the heavy guitar, everything, your vocals are just amazing. I've been passing this along to all my friends, trying to get, you know, having them give it a listen and encouraging them to buy your album and support you.
So, well, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Well, you know, you mentioned, you know, the praise I gave you and so on, but I gotta tell you, you guys make it easy to give you that kind of compliment, because this stuff is amazing. The song that we came in on was "Come and Take It," and an obvious Second Amendment ballad, I guess you would say. I just love this song. What are your views on a lot of the stuff coming down the pike right now?
You mean politically speaking?
Well, politically speaking, and the fact that that we're seeing an upsurge in different stories where, you know, people are being arrested for brandishing plastic guns, and you have the ATF confiscating shipments of toy guns to a toy store, those kinds of things. You know, where do you think we're headed with all of this, man?
Sounds like Nazi Germany all over again, doesn't it?
Agreed, very much so. You know, the Third Reich didn't lose the war, they just changed locations. Been saying that for years.
I guess I'll have to go along with it.
But in all seriousness, the lyrics to "Come and Take It" are you know, pretty brash. And well, when you were writing this song, I mean, were you afraid? I mean, at some point, did you have did you have to fight with a mental censor, I guess you'd say? I find that on the show oftentimes I'll be saying things and I'll have to kind of wrestle with myself of, should I really say it this way? Would it sound inflammatory? No, I don't think your lyrics are in any way, shape, or form. In fact, I think it's just, you know, in your face, this is the truth. But did you kind of go through that process while you're writing the lyrics for the song?
Well, Eric, the guitar player, actually came up with an idea for that chorus.
Right.
About to come and take it. If you want it, you have to come and take it. I'm not going to give it up easily. So I had that chorus lyrical idea, and I built the rest of the song around that. He came up with a guitar riff and the chorus thing, and I basically put the words to it. And when I was writing this whole album, it was never a question of, am I going to have to censor myself? Because
right.
I'm about as straightforward as it comes. I just tell it like it is. I don't believe in beating around the bush. And
excellent.
And I'm 110% pro-freedom. So this, for me, was something I'd wanted to do for a long time. And this was an outlet for me. And the only thing I did was, when I was writing the lyrics to these songs, was to make sure that the people understood that this is about self-defense. This whole album is about self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
It is not about initiating aggression. It is not about causing trouble. It is not random acts of violence. It is nothing like that of the sort. When you read all of these songs, it is about, I just want to be left alone. You leave me in peace, we'll have peace.
Absolutely.
And that's what the song's about. The come and take it. I'm over here just protecting myself, and if you want to stop me from protecting myself, then you got to come take it from me. And backed into a corner was the same way.
Sure.
I've had enough. I'm just trying to find inner peace and live my life the right way and do right by others. And everywhere I turn, you're in my face and wanting to tell me how to live.
Yeah,
and rule me and control me. So I'm coming out fighting.
I love it. Yeah, and it's like that, honestly, that whole sentiment comes out loud and clear throughout the whole album. Especially Come and Take It. You know, I loved the whole idea of, it's not just talking about guns, it's talking about, what that gun symbolizes, which of course is freedom. You know, if they want
Absolutely.
Your freedom, they have to come and take it. And I just really loved that whole sentiment really coming out loud and clear in that.
Well, I'm glad you played that song. We're actually in the process of, we're looking to record a video for that song.
Really? That would be, I can't wait to see that.
So we're already brainstorming ideas about what type of shots and scenery we want to use for that. And of course, you're going to have your hunting shots and your self-defense shots.
Oh, sure.
And things like that. And government may be going house to house, trying to confiscate things, and one citizen decides he's had enough, he's going to stand up to it. So, that, you know, these are all ideas we've been kicking around about for this video. So I'm very excited about it. I hope we can get started here in a few weeks or so and start putting some things together. And hopefully by spring or so, we'll have something together that we can share with everybody.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can't wait either. And I got to say that you just talking about it has made me excited about it as well, so I really looking forward to that. And you mentioned you know, the song Backed Into a Corner. I kind of had that queued up next. So I don't know if you want to kind of give that a listen, and then after, on the other side here, we'll listen to a few minutes of it, and if you want to kind of give us like a little commentary of you know, kind of a rundown of what this song is really all about. I feel like it kind of, it's what makes a lot of us tick. Mm-hmm. Am I going out on a limb there?
No, not at all. It's basically a person who's had enough. Because, you know, people like us, we just want to live in peace and freedom. Some people think that anarchy is chaos and killing and destruction and vandalism.
Not at all.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
Any type of anarchist type of society, a bunch of anarcho whatevers and anarchist this and
yeah, I mean,
whatever.
Literally, the word simply means, you know, a lack of ruler, you know,
right.
a lack of domination over the will, you know, the will of someone's someone else's will over the will of others.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I consider myself to be a voluntarist. I you can sum up my whole philosophy in one sentence. I do not support involuntary relationships. So that's me.
So
what this song is about is getting tired of people forcing involuntary relationships upon you.
I just love it. I love the way you just summed that up. Let's give it a listen, and I want to talk to you about it here on the other side. Everyone, this is Shadow Resistance Radio. It's 8:03 p.m. I'm streaming live with Doug Kendall from Downcount, and looks to be like it's going to be a great conversation. Thanks for joining us, Doug.
Thank you.
Yeah, Doug, that's great stuff, man. Got to say.
Thank you, sir.
I love the whole idea of, you don't want to be, backed into that corner and forced into, as you said, the forced relationships. And, the fact that, they can't silence your voice. And I'd hate to hear that because you have a fantastic one, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
Getting back to your overriding philosophy, you summed it up in one sentence. I thought it was brilliant. Of course, the first thing it reminded me of was the novel Anthem by Ayn Rand. The whole idea of basically understanding yourself, and then when you want to initiate a relationship with someone else, it's through your own free will, as opposed to this sort of mindless urge of the way we see most of society going today. So, I really liked what you summed it up with. It's as far as your overriding philosophy.
It's the whole voluntarist principle, the voluntary society, voluntary relationships, voluntary transactions, these kind of things. And I hear some people say that. We need, in civilized society, we need laws and taxation to keep order and progress and things like this. And that completely blows my mind because they say we need government to protect our freedom. And that's one of the biggest oxymoron, craziest things I've ever heard in my life.
It really is oxymoron, definitely, yeah.
Because freedom is not being under submission to a dominating force.
Exactly.
And government is a dominating force. So how is
by,
it?
By definition. Government, yeah, yeah.
So how can you say that you need a dominating force to keep you free from a dominating force?
Exactly. It makes no sense whatsoever.
None at all. And I wrote an article. I have a blog site, a commentary site that I post some things from time to time. It's anarchistpov.wordpress.com. Mm-hmm. It's called Wisdom of the Anarchs. And I wrote a piece back in February of last year. It's called Reality Check. And it was basically, people talk about how power comes from the people.
Right.
And that's where government gets its powers, power from the people.
Sure.
But you and I, we're equal, right?
That's the idea.
Yes. We should strive to consider each other equal.
Exactly.
I think it's a good way to look at life, good philosophy to adhere to. Okay, so if you and I view each other as equals, I can't go into your house and take your children because I don't agree with your religion or lack thereof, or the way you're schooling your children.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go in your house and take things out of your house or take money out of your wallet. I can't come tear down your shed in the backyard because you didn't get my permission, a permit.
To put it up. Which is, right. I mean, in all, of course, what you're obviously listing is all of the things that the government actually does indeed do to all of us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I can't tell you where you can travel, what you can read, what you can eat, what you can say, none of that stuff. I don't have that power over you. I don't have that legitimate power over you.
Right.
And
right.
Vice versa. You don't have it over me.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if you and I don't have this power, legitimate power, how is it that we can transfer this power that we do not have to other people and give them fancy titles and offices, and now they do have the power to do what we didn't have the power to do?
Exactly, yeah.
It's totally illegitimate.
It makes no sense, I agree.
Not at all. And that's my view, the reality check. That's the message I put out there. And I've been quite surprised at how many people have read that and said, you know what, you're right. I never looked at it that way, never thought of it that way, but when you put it in those type of terms, you're right, you're absolutely right. And I have some people say, well, I understand where you're coming from, but
there's always, there's always that but. Yeah.
And if you have a but in there, it totally negates what you said before.
Before, I agree. Yeah,
so I mean, it just drives me nuts sometimes.
It does me too. And, you know, I think that's what guys like us do in terms of when we talk to people, is just trying to get them to see what they think they see in a new way, mm-hmm. in a way that makes them kind of rethink what they thought they believed. In terms of, you mentioned the idea of, you know, not telling someone, you know, where they can travel or how they can travel. You know, this is supposed to be a free country, and yet we're not allowed to travel freely. I talked to my students about this idea, when we read the book 1984, what I try to explain to them what doublethink is.
Mm.
And, you know, and they never really understand it until I give the example of, I ask them to raise their hands. I said, how many of you are really looking forward to getting your license? And 100% raise their hands. I said, why? And they said, well, I said, what does it represent to you? And they said, freedom. I said, exactly. That's exactly what, you know, in our society it represents. But what you're actually doing is looking forward to the day when you can ask your government's permission to travel freely. When you can ask your government's permission to travel to the store, to travel to a job so that you can get money, to go to the store to buy things. You're asking their permission to do all of those things on that day. So how does that represent freedom?
You're absolutely right.
And so you all of a sudden you see that light bulb go off. Mm-hmm. And they say, wow, I never even thought of it that way. But in their minds, they're totally looking forward to it. It represents freedom. It's this whole idea of this is what it means to be free, finally. And what they're really doing is asking for their permission to be enslaved.
Well, see, to me, that's the difference between freedom and liberty. I hear people use freedom and liberty as
interchangeably. They're not.
It's not.
Right.
Liberty to me is what soldiers get on the weekend.
Exactly.
The weekend liberty is to go into town. Then you have to be back by a certain hour to start everything all over again at the beginning of the week.
Exactly.
I don't want liberty. Liberty means you're allowing me. I don't want you to allow me. I don't need your permission.
Exactly.
I am a sovereign individual.
That's different. Oh, yeah. I'm with you 100% there, brother, because, I mean, it's really refreshing to have a conversation with somebody who knows their Jordan Maxwell. you know, the whole idea of, you know, what these words really mean and the nature of language. You know, once you start truly discerning meaning, that's where you can begin to free yourself and, as you said, you know, become a sovereign. So
yes,
and on that note, I would like to kind of cue up "Free." This is from the band Downcount. I'm talking with Doug Kendall on Shadow Resistance Radio. It's only 8:13 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I'm already having fun. How about you, man?
I'm having a blast.
All right, I'm really glad you joined us. And let's give the song "Free." The album is the soundtrack of the revolution. Fantastic title. This is Downcount, Free. That's "Free" from Downcount. Doug, you know, obviously the listeners don't know this, but I mean, you were had told me something interesting here in that while we were listening to that great tune, was the idea that that was a riff that you had for about 3 years, you said, before you put it together?
Yes, that "Burning Free" were, I think, the first two songs I wrote specifically for the new project. And "Free" was a riff I had running through my head. I basically had the music worked out for that song for quite a while and just needed to put the lyrics to it. So when Eric and I got together and began working on the stuff for the album, that was one of the first songs I completed. And it's one of my favorites.
Oh yeah, mine too. I had messaged you. That riff is just, it's just sick. I just love it. You just tear it up on that song. It's great. And you said that Burn was also one of the first songs that you wrote for this album. You said that it does have a political message. You just have to look more into it. You want to explain a little bit what you meant by that?
On the surface, Burn seems like a song that's just about being ticked off with relationships and things like that, and just in general, being angry and that kind of thing. But there's a reason for it. If you listen to the lyrics and dig a little deeper, I guess it requires a little explaining too, though, some background. This song was inspired by my irritation with a political party that I was in there for a while.
More than understandable. Well, I mean, I could see that where, the lyrics of live life in vain, circle the drain like it was before. Disappointment mm-hmm. rains, cloud of doubt, it hangs, raining as before. The whole idea of I tried to save, you turned away.
3 years ago.
Right. Which, you know, and people were using that, the word libertarian, as if it was a dirty word and had no sense, had no place in a party that had to do with the Republic, I didn't understand that whole argument. I don't know about you. How did you feel about that? Looks like we're running into a little bit of a problem there. I'm going to try to get you back, Doug. Okay. Oh, you can hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, great. We had a little bit of a disconnect there, it looked like.
Yes, we did. It's crazy.
Sorry about that, but we were just talking about the idea of the whole idea when you said that, the whole thing
with versus
libertarianism. And, I was trying to think of, they use the word libertarian to describe something that, I find it hard to believe. They gave it a very, when you hear political commentators describe something as libertarian, they say it like it's a really filthy word.
Right.
But even though they're not using it in terms of what it really means, and like you said, they were having a real, disparity between these two ideas. You want to talk about how that kind of ties in what you were thinking?
Well, at the last Libertarian National Convention too, there was a whole divisional thing going on within the party, anarchists versus libertarians. And
right.
I think it was the Libertarian Reform Caucus that was behind all this. They were even passing out stickers, anarchists versus libertarian, and all this kind of stuff, wanting to water down the platform and remove things. And I was just very disillusioned by all that. See, I was a member of the Libertarian Party for several years, and I actually ran for Congress once. I ran for
no kidding.
South Carolina State House once. I was a membership director of the state party. I was executive director of the state party for a while.
No kidding.
Yep. While I was in the party, like the last two or three years I was in the party, I had an epiphany. I came across something that described who I was. I never really knew there was a term for it. I always knew I went beyond libertarianism.
Right.
I never really knew what to call myself.
Well, see, that's just it. For most people, when you look at the parties that are out there, the thing that describes most closely, they say, well, I guess the parties that they're aware of or the terms that they're aware of is libertarianism. That's the one that most people, when they actually hear about it and learn about it, they say, oh, that's the one that most describes me. But then when you dig a little deeper, like you were just saying, what happens?
Well, once I once the light bulb clicked on, and I went, "Wow, that's me. That's it."
Mm-hmm.
I knew exactly what I had to do at that point. And it's hard to let go of things you've been a part of and worked so hard on for so many years. But I kind of backed out of the party, and there was a reason for it. I think the finals, aside from the anarchist versus libertarian stuff, which is ridiculous to me, because we're not even at a point where we're not even at a constitutional government level right now. So to divide the party over something like that is ridiculous in my view. They were causing unnecessary division. So I didn't really like that at all.
Right.
And that was one of the final things that pushed me over the edge. But I was doing an interview. One of the newspapers from the upper part of the state had called me to get the opinion of the executive director on one issue that was going down in the state legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wanted my opinion. I think it had something to do with smoking with children in the car or something like that, smoking bans, whatever.
Obviously, and a big hot button issue there, right? Yeah.
I know. And I knew how I needed to answer to be true to me. But the Libertarian Party promotes a small, limited government and this and the other. And when the guy asked me the question, I hesitated. I had to think about it. Do I remain true to me, or do I answer as executive director of the party? And I realized that I could no longer be executive director of the party if I had to go against what I personally felt.
Right.
So I told the guy, I said, "You know what? That's a good question. I got to think about that." And of course, the newspaper guy took it and said, "They don't even know what they're talking about. They don't even know what their position is." So it didn't look good at all. And then I resigned the next day from my position. I said, "You know what? I can't represent you guys because you don't go as far as I do. So I don't want to misrepresent you, and I want to be true to myself. So the honorable thing to do is for me to back out."
Right, right. So here you have a political candidate with integrity, which is unheard of. And, of course, you know, that's our free and objective media for you, of giving that, you know, the spin of, oh, they have no idea what their own policy is. I mean, you have a whole bunch of things going on in that.
Well, that the first line of that song, Burn, was about that. I call your name, I bring you shame. I'm an anarchist, I'm a voluntarist, I'm an anarcho-capitalist, whatever.
Right.
And you guys don't seem to like that. I felt like I was being more of an outcast all the time. I would bring up my views and common sense, logical solutions to problems, and freedom initiatives, things like that, from a freedom perspective. And it just got torn down and shoved aside, and I felt like I was increasingly being pushed, you know, wasn't as welcome as I had felt before.
I'm sorry, keep going, I don't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
That's okay. I just decided at that point that I wish these guys well, and God bless them, I love all of them, they're great people over there, but there comes a time when you have to, when you realize what your principles are, you have to stand on those principles.
Absolutely.
You can't be wishy-washy. You can't water things down. You can't accept things just because the status quo says you should, or you shouldn't compromise what you feel just because others think that you should.
Right, and it's a matter of you actually truly having principles. The idea that if you say something that you believe in, it's not enough just to say you believe this and toe the party line, but you actually have to believe it.
Well, I'm that way to a fault. And sometimes that gets me in trouble, or sometimes makes other people feel uneasy, but this is who I am. This is what I believe. And I'm not only fighting for me to have freedom of choice and freedom to live my life the way I want to. I'm fighting for your freedom, too.
Absolutely.
To live the way you want, to worship the way you want, or not at all, or travel where you want to go, and network with other people as you see fit, and eat what you want to eat, even if it destroys you from the inside out. As long as you accept responsibility for the stupid things you do, then it's your choice to make.
Why should it be anybody? Exactly. Why should it be anybody else's problem what you decide to do
and
to yourself?
Yeah. Don't ask me to pay for it, either.
Agreed, 100%. Well, I'll tell you what, let's give Byrne a listen. I want to tell the listeners, I've been talking to Doug Kendall here, and if you're just joining us or you just queued up the podcast here, if you're one of the people downloading it and listening to it later, we're going to listen to the song Byrne from the album from Down Count, Soundtrack of the Revolution, and listen to these lyrics close because it is indeed a political song, as Doug has stated. So, thanks, Doug. I want to give this a listen, and maybe we can catch up here on the other side and talk about a few more things if you have time. I can feel it.
I can feel it too. I was bobbing my head.
Definitely, me too. Shadow Resistance Radio, everybody. Thanks for joining. It's 8:32 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, February 20th, 2010. Special edition of Shadow Resistance Radio. I'm live streaming the show with Doug Kendall, singer of Down Count. Just really digging these tunes. Like I said, I can't say enough good things about it. And not only that, the message doesn't only come out of your music. I mean, just having a conversation with you here, you know, it's really refreshing to hear a voice that you know, espouses the same things that it seems that every sentence you've said so far, it just, you know, I can embrace it. And it's as if I'm having a great conversation with myself, only I'm answering. I gotta say, I'm enjoying it. Thanks for joining me, man. So what I want to do is, you know, I noticed on, you know, checking out the bios of the band, the very first thing that they say under your bio is you've been given the nickname Chug. Now, I got to ask, is this a drinking reference, or is it just because it rhymes?
Oh, gosh, no. I've never had alcohol in my life.
Good for you.
No, I've never. I'm clean as a driven stud, and I tell you, I've never done anything. I've always just been a metalhead and love motorcycles, video games. You know, I'm your average dude, except I just don't. It's never been my style. I just never drank.
There you go.
That. But I fully support your choice to imbibe if you choose.
don't encourage me. Don't encourage me.
Came about from Eric actually gave me that name because I told him when I approached him about doing the project that I wanted to bring back chug rock.
Yeah.
You don't hear anybody just chugging it out anymore. Everything's going 90 miles an hour and screaming, yelling, it's kind of Iron Maiden-ish with the harmonic guitars going on.
Right,
stuff
right.
Like this. You just don't really hear any freight train stuff anymore. And that's what I wanted. That's what I was writing for. And so he started calling me Chug because of that.
That's
and
great.
It just kind of stuck.
So. I love it. No, it's great. And you're absolutely right. Like a lot of the stuff out there, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, really great heavy metal bands out there that are... You know, sending out a great message.
Sure.
But you know, they you're right. And it was obviously I was really thinking that, you know, had to do with the sound, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that sums it up perfectly. You're right. You don't hear just, you know, these, you know, nice, you know, beefy sounds. Like you said, chugging like a freight train. That's a great way to describe it.
Well, and that was the point for me, because that's what I always loved growing up with, was the chugging bands growing up.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. What were your influences then?
Oh, wow. I guess Metallica, Megadeth, listened to some Anthrax here and there, mm-hmm. some Old Armored Saint, the first two or three albums were just incredible.
Agreed.
First couple of Wasp albums were really good. That song Jack Action is a lot like I Write.
Right.
It's just got that thick chugging, pound you in the face kind of guitar thing going on, and that's what I've always loved. And speaking of other bands like this, like Metallica actually had a great song years ago, Eye of the Beholder. Which
Eye
is
of the Beholder.
Here.
Yeah, great song. I agree. I take it then you've been listening to the new Megadeth Endgame. Have you given that a listen?
I haven't heard all of that.
Oh, it's fantastic. Right. You know, they Dave Mustaine really spells it out. He did a great interview with Alex Jones when that album came out. Really, just, you know, laying it on the line, talking about, you know, world governance, talking about, you know, the idea of depopulation, talking about mm-hmm. all of these things that are, you know, really going on in our world today. So, you know, it's definitely worth a listen. I know you'll love it.
Well, what I've heard of it, I really like. And, you know, I used to do music reviews and a music business column for two different entertainment publications mm-hmm. a few years ago. And so I would interview bands all the time and that kind of thing, do write-ups on the albums. And I actually met Dave Mustaine and the boys on the Countdown to Extinction tour.
Oh, really?
And yeah.
What was that like?
I think that Dave is a jerk or something. And I got to tell you, he may be hard to deal with sometimes from a business standpoint, but you got to admire a person who knows what they want and they're not afraid to say it and make it happen. And I can appreciate that. Now, whether he comes across as a little abrasive sometimes, I don't know. I haven't dealt with him enough. But when I met him, all those dudes were just as cool as they could be, man. They signed all our stuff, and I got to ask them questions about the album and their sound and what's going on, and that's when I learned that Marty Friedman was in the band at the time, and he was telling us that he had some solo stuff coming out, and we were just ecstatic about that. And he said, no, it's not going to be what you think now. This is a different side of me. This is kind of like my heaven side. And those solo albums were great. Some of that clean stuff and just the cascading stuff that he does and the soundscapes that he makes are just incredible. But I thought Dave was a really cool dude, and I've always enjoyed his pro freedom stance. He had that song "Hook in Mouth" years ago.
Oh yeah,
about freedom means nothing to me as long as there's a PMRC. And I fully agree with him, because you're going to find this very funny. You remember the PMRC, Parents Music Resource Center?
Oh yeah, sure do. Absolutely.
Tipper Gore.
That's our generation, man.
Yeah, Tipper Gore was trying to censor rock and rap music, and they had Senate hearings on the whole thing. Frank Zappa and Dee
I remember Snyder. It well, and Dee Snyder and Frank Zappa's their testimony was just genius. At many points, it was just brilliant.
Yes, and I was a pretty rebellious kid back then. I mean, I was always a good kid, never got in trouble, but I was I didn't want anybody messing with me, you know. And I felt that Tipper Gore and the PMRC were just, this is just unacceptable, and I became very angry about that. And because I was growing up a little heavy metal drummer at the time, I started out on drums,
right?
And I didn't want anybody, I was trying to write some music too. I mean, it was simple back then, but I had aspirations.
Sure,
I didn't
sure.
The government getting in my way and telling me what I could say, and so I became pretty pretty rebellious and pro freedom. And I guess I can probably thank Tipper Gore for leading me down the path to who I am today. How ironic! Huh?
It is. It's great. No, I still have Tipper Gore to thank for introducing me to bands like Wasp. You know, because I just had to hear it after that, you know, and it's like I wasn't even that interested. I didn't even think they were that good, but I figured, oh, well, if that lady wants to ban it, I got to give it a listen, you know. So I'm right there with you, man. I started out as a drummer, taught myself lead guitar in high school. You know, played in a band all through college, and, you know, all had those aspirations. And I agree, when that whole fiasco came out, The thing that it's one of the things I think that actually began my true education, and that's what I call the whole process of waking up to what our society does to us. My real education, I think, began then when I noticed how there were certain aspects of the musician's testimony that there's no way we were ever going to be able to hear. You could see how you know, the way you know, the commercial cuts were coming and those kinds of things. You know, there were certain sound bites they just didn't want you to hear because they were so poignant. And you didn't find out until much later, you know, a lot of the things that they actually said with the advent of the internet and when a lot of those things actually started coming out and being made public. And that was one of the things that really, you know, opened my eyes to that veil that they drop in front of, you know, the average person who sits there in front of the tube, you know, like a zombie, and just absorbs what they see, you know, on a plastic box as if it's reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I guess you're right. I guess we all have a lot to thank Tipper Gore for in that sense.
Well, you know, there is no news. There is no mainstream news.
Exactly.
That you get. That isn't filtered, or some PR person hasn't worked on to make it sound a certain way, or come across a certain way, or give a certain psychological impact.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, that's really sort of my area of study is the idea of symbolism and the power of just language itself, and how that is used to, you know, like you said, influence people emotionally and bypass their intellectual faculties so that, you know, they just accept something as true, and they end up accepting the executive producer's assertions, you know, as they're rushed along, you know, to someone else's conclusions before you're even able to make your own. And, you know, that's definitely, I think it was back in the, during World War One, when a lot of the robber barons, you know, expressed an interest in just buying up newspapers so that they could push us into World War One. You know, this is what it all dates back to, and you can basically trace, you know, every single media outlet to just a handful of corporations, literal corporations that are running the show, definitely.
You got it. And speaking of PR and psychological impact, I got a book called Toxic Sludge is Good for You. You ever heard that?
I have heard of it. I haven't picked it up yet.
Toxic Sludge is Good for You, Five Damn Lies in the Public Relations Industry. It's by John Stauber and Sheldon Rampton. Mm-hmm. And this book talks about how all the PR firms and big wigs will do everything in their power to make sure everything you hear is done by a PR expert, and they'll shut voices out to make sure you never hear them by running counter campaigns and smear campaigns and convincing people with threats of, of lawsuits or something to keep people's opinions out of the mainstream media, And I got through about 10 pages of this book before, and that's all it took for me to realize what this book is.
It's another PR campaign.
Thing that they are claiming everybody else
does.
Is doing.
Exactly.
This book is brilliant, but not for the reason you think. It's brilliant that they're telling you PR people are running your life and shutting people out and trying to influence you. And then this whole book is it's coming from an extreme leftist point of view, and they're name-dropping books that you should read because it tells of a certain lifestyle, and people are beating up this certain corporation because of their environmental initiatives, and oh, that's just bad. All psychology.
It is. Well, I mean, you know, as soon as Edward Bernays came out with the book Propaganda, you know, that was Sigmund Freud's nephew. Go figure. When he came out with that idea, that's when the whole thing really amped up, you know? Absolutely. And it's funny you mentioned the whole idea of, you know, the environmental campaign. That's exactly what that whole thing is. I mean, when you look at Climate Gate and how quickly that was, you know, refuted and swept under the rug, and of course, one of their top scientists was suicided from the seventh floor, you know, in London.
Right.
You know, that whole nine yards, you know, that, like you said, you know, it has to do with a smear campaign, has to do with, you know, Operation Let's Cover Our Tracks. So, that's I think that's a great example you cited.
Well, don't buy that book, because I just told you what it's about. So don't become a victim to more PR.
More PR. Perfect. Words to live by there. Oh, this is great. 8:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, February 28, 2010. I'm streaming live here this evening with Doug Kendall. If you're just joining us, it looks like we've had a few people joining us and dropping off from our server here as I'm kind of keeping track while trying to maintain some semblance of coherency while having this conversation. Unfortunately for me, I don't have to. I'm on the air here with Doug Kendall, and he's spelling it out for both of us, I think, well enough for he and I both. So,
awesome.
Yeah, thanks for joining me, Doug. So, I understand that, I mean, you've worn a lot of hats over the years, looks like, and one of the things that you did was exactly what I'm attempting to do, sort of, and you hosted your own radio show that was a talk radio, talking about politics and your views. I definitely wanted to pick your brain on how can I go about being a little bit more successful here, but I'd like to hear about your experiences when you did that. What was that like?
Well, you know, that was one of the things I really, really enjoyed. And I would still, if I could see a way to do it, I would love to get back into it and do it again sometime.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed having a radio show. My friend Victor, he is involved in the libertarian movement, and he started this thing, I guess it was about 6 years ago, and or 7 years ago, something like that. And he started a radio show on a station in a local area, and after a few months, he brought me on as a co-host. I had been a guest on his show to talk about the United Nations and sustainable development, been to 21, all that kind of stuff, and I brought a lot of research and information in on that, and we had a great show, and he was a friend of mine, and he's still one of my best friends to this day, and we work together every day, and but I joined him on his show. It's called Unauthorized Access, and I was his co-host there for a while. We left and went to another station in the local area. I've been on three major stations in my area. But we moved to another station, went to Saturdays. We had a morning show during the week at the first station, then we moved to Saturdays at the other station, second station. And we were the top-rated political talk show in our market, in our slot.
Wow.
But people didn't know what to make of us at first, I don't think. Because we were telling them things they'd never heard before. And we were spelling things out in a language they can understand. We were giving them ways to go find the information for themselves so that they could see it with their own eyes.
Use their own powers of discernment, you know, make up their own minds, you know, not trying to convince anyone of anything. Sure, sure.
Right. And at first they were kind of, well, these guys seem kind of a little extreme there, you know. But as time went on and they started seeing that the things we were telling them were coming to pass, they started realizing, hey, these guys are the real deal. They know what they're talking about, and they're giving us a heads up. We were talking about communists and stuff years ago before Obama even entered the scene.
Oh, sure.
And that's what I consider Obama to be. He's a Marxist. And we were talking about this coming for a long time, and people didn't want to believe it. But now, I mean, I still get people coming by my business or calling me and saying, you know, still wish you guys were doing the show. You guys were right. You know, that kind of thing. So at first they didn't know how to take us, but once they started seeing the writing on the wall and the evidence happening, then we became perfectly accepted, and that's when everything took off. And Vic, he had a situation come up in his immediate family. His wife needed a kidney transplant. They had been on the list for several years, and they got the call one day and said, hey, you're at the top of the list. It could be any time now. You have to be ready to go at a moment's notice. You have to be here in 24 hours.
Right, right.
If we get a kidney. So he bowed out of the radio thing. He didn't want to have this on his plate and be responsible for it if he had to jet.
Oh, sure.
I didn't understand that.
Yeah, you have to respect that.
Another station in the area said, hey, if you're going to stay in radio, why don't you come over here and you can do your show, your own show. And I said, okay, great. So I went to the news station, started a show on Saturday mornings called The Dangerous Doug Kendall Show. Because
I love it.
Because Vic had gotten the nickname Vicious Victor, and I had gotten the name Dangerous Doug. And the people, I guess it kind of stuck, and everybody had a lot of fun with that. And so I said, you know, why go against the grain? Just have fun with it, go along with it. And everybody knew me by that name anyway, so that's what we called the show. We had a great time. We started streaming the show over the internet, and we would get calls from the Netherlands, London, across the United States.
Isn't it amazing when you look at, you know, where, you know, some of your listeners actually are, and, you know, you see Denmark, you see, you know, Ramstein, Germany. It's quite a kick, I got to say.
Well, you know, one of the things, when we first started streaming the show, the first 2 weeks, immediately upon streaming this thing, it crashed.
Of course.
We had too many people trying to access it.
Right.
We had to eventually ramp up to a terabyte of transfer.
Wow.
To keep it stable.
Wow. Well, I can honestly say I have not yet had that problem, Doug.
Give it time, bro. Give it time. Keep preaching the truth, and people will come on board.
Yeah.
But I had a blast with it, and I know you're having a good time with it, too. Otherwise, you wouldn't do it. But it's so very fulfilling to tell people and see those light bulbs click on when you give them information.
Exactly.
And put two and two together and put that piece of the puzzle in place and the light clicked on. It's very fulfilling to see these people come out of that dark place, out of the darkness, remove the blinders from their eyes, and begin to live a more free life.
Exactly. I mean, you know, even if they themselves, you know, recognize, you know, that they are locked in some form of servitude, understanding that and knowing that is what frees their mind, you know. Mm-hmm. And you can, as soon as you free their mind and they realize that they themselves have powers of discernment that they can use for themselves and actually seek out this information, they don't have to take some, you know, talking head's word for it out from the tube, those kinds of things. They can actually go out and find real information for themselves. You know, it's really empowering.
It's very empowering, and I guess that's why I do it.
Mm-hmm.
I used to use this analogy about freedom. You can take a puppy from the time it's born and put it on a leash, on a chain, in the backyard. Chain it to a tree or put it in a cage, whatever. It's captive.
Mm-hmm.
But every time you, the master, will go out to pet that puppy, it will be happy to see you, it will jump around, its tail will wag. It loves you to death.
Right.
Because you come out and pet it, and you feed it. But you let that dog off the chain and let him run around the neighborhood for a couple of days. Then bring that dog back and try to put that dog on the chain. You're going to see a completely different dog because he knows what it means to be free now, and he is no longer happy with that chain.
Oh, yeah. No, I know exactly what you're saying. And on the flip side, you know, I view people oftentimes as being... And, you know, that is always perfectly true. When all of a sudden they realize that they're free and, you know, that they want to run around, then they recognize that chain, and that's when they try to break it. I agree. The analogy that often comes up in my mind is the old, I don't know if you ever heard this one, the allegory of the fleas, where you can keep a bunch of fleas alive in a terrarium with a glass lid over the top. And these fleas will jump, and they will hit that glass ceiling and bounce off. And after a while, they stop jumping so high where they don't actually hit the glass ceiling. Mm-hmm. They learn where it is, and they can only jump so high within that container. And then what you'll do is, even if you take that glass ceiling off, they will still only jump that high because they've convinced themselves that's where the ceiling is.
It's conditioning.
Conditioning, and you know, people don't recognize that, you know, there really is no ceiling there. They've been told there is, that the ceiling is actually in their head, and that's where the prison bars actually are, is within the mind.
Yes, and that song, you played a little bit of it, Free.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of that song, the last verse is, "Your house is not my house."
Yes.
You know which house I'm referring to, right?
I certainly do.
the big white one
and it's like, yeah, the White House. I mean, you have that, and so your house is not my house, your house is coming down, you want to lock me out, take me down, knock me out, it's just, I shall not be moved, disregard your rule. I mean, that's just, there it is.
It says it all, doesn't it?
It really does, you know. You have these people have as much power as we give them, and that's what most people don't stop to understand. The only reason why they have power is because so many people believe they do.
And we don't have the power to give them in the first place.
Exactly. That's all an illusion. It's this, you know, huge paradigm that has been taught and ingrained in the brain in such a way that, like you said, you know, we have been conditioned to believe all of these things to be true. When they have no real basis in reality.
Well, when we were doing our show, we used to beat politicians and officials over the head. We used to rake them across the coals,
mm-hmm.
and beat them like rugs when they would do stupid stuff. And we used to uncover things that people would not normally see.
Right.
For instance, in one of our schools in the area, they had a fourth grade writing book. It taught how to write paragraphs and complete ideas and put them into a paper. some type of four-square method, I think it was called.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of it, yeah.
You know, four ideas and put them together to make one cohesive paper or whatever.
Right.
And one of the topics in that book, that workbook that kids were assigned to do, was paying your income taxes. And one of the ideas was make sure you pay before, you know, April 15th. And another idea was it's your patriotic duty or civic duty. And another one of the other squares was something else. It was four squares that made up this income tax idea.
Right.
Teaching this to fourth grade children who don't even know what money is yet, much less a government or an income tax or an IRS. Talk about conditioning.
Complete indoctrination. Yeah, complete indoctrination. It is. Yeah.
And we would spell these things out on the air. And, man, we had people running for cover, and we had people that hated us. They would never come in and say it, though. They would never go on air and say it. They would never send us any message. They would try to
that would legitimize your message. You know, they can't do that.
Well, they would try to... They were trying to tear us down behind our backs.
Oh, sure.
Things like that. But, I mean, even some of the local politicians, senators, and representatives, they would not come on our show. Wouldn't come on my show. Because, I mean, I had one guy come on one time, and I just beat him up. He's a former South Carolina Law Enforcement Division officer, and now he's a senator, a big blowhard, boy. You got a problem. That's what guys found him like.
Right.
And I beat him up on the show, and he could not back his position with any type of logic. And that guy, he would make excuses every time we wanted to talk to him again about initiatives going on. And there was a Congressman, Joe Wilson, from South Carolina. He was a U.S. congressman.
Mm-hmm.
I tried several times to get that guy on the show because he knew that I was going to rip him apart.
Right.
I tried several times to get this guy to come on the show, talk with his people, his handlers, and they would assure me, yeah, sure, we can do that. And then a couple of days before he was scheduled to come on, they would always back out.
Find some way to duck it, yeah.
He would come on an afternoon drive show maybe twice a month.
During rush hour, with probably some sort of canned comments that, you know...
Exactly.
You know, yeah, yeah, softball questions, yeah.
Yes, these little safe host things. But he could not find time on a Saturday morning to come up with my show.
Right.
I mean, I finally wrote him back. I said, look, here's the deal. I will clear my schedule. I don't care if I've got the Pope coming on my show. I will tell the Pope he has to wait for Congressman Joe Wilson. You just tell me when he can make it, and I will schedule that. Just let me know.
And let me guess, it never happened. Yeah, it never happened, did it?
No. And that's fulfilling, too, because you know that these people, they can't justify their positions. They have no real power. They're all blowhards. They're all reading from scripts. They're all trying to get you to follow a plan of action. Well, these two major parties are just two sides of the same totalitarian coin.
I always say coin. Yeah, exactly.
And they fool the people into believing that they have a voice, have a power. That's all public input at the local level is, just to make people think that they have a voice.
Right.
We've packed local chambers with people on initiatives here in our area. And they had to have two meetings because they were overflowing outside the chamber. We got people through the radio to come down and protest stuff. And they'd have to have two meetings because they couldn't accommodate everybody at the first meeting. So they had to have two. And they would have public input. They call it public input during the course of the meeting, where people can stand up at a podium and they give them 2 minutes. And they have a stopwatch.
There's a time limit on freedom of speech at these meetings, always, yeah.
And as soon as they call your name, they click it. And this clock is running while you're walking down the steps to the podium.
Right.
Okay? So you basically got about a minute and 40 seconds by the time you get to the podium. And then as soon as that 2 minutes goes off, okay, thank you very much. I don't care what you're saying, that's it. You're done. So 95% of people can get up there and say, we don't want this. No. And you can look at these people on the council, and they're just
Right.
And elbow desk, and it's basically, okay, let's get this over so we can vote. This is a mere formality. And as soon as everybody says, no, 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 they say, okay, ready to vote? Ayes have it. Passes. Thank you.
Exactly.
They don't care.
They don't care?
No, you can't do anything about it. You won't do anything about it.
And when someone is sitting there and they're protesting, and they're, it doesn't matter how eloquently they're speaking, it doesn't matter the quality of their words, you know damn well those people are just waiting for that beeper to go off at the end of the 2 minutes. That's
exactly.
All. They're just waiting it out.
And that's why no debate in the political system whatsoever. There's never been a government in human history that has protected the life, liberty, and property, as that document says,
mm-hmm.
of the people. It has never happened in human history. So for these people to tell me sometimes that, oh, we need government to protect us and protect our freedoms and our properties and our liberties and our bodies, are you nuts?
We need to protect ourselves. Yeah, we have to protect all of those things, from them. Exactly.
Yeah, so... So for people to tell me that we need government to do these things, I'm sorry, I can't take you seriously. I'm going to try to enlighten you and show you the logic behind my reasoning,
mm-hmm.
and show you where things are just crazy in your world, but I just can't take that seriously. This is conditioning. We have to break through that condition.
Yeah, and you know, a lifetime of conditioning is a difficult thing to break, but when you can have... when you have... all of these distractions, you know, they purposefully create cognitive dissonance,
yes.
you know, in people after they've been conditioned so that they cannot, you know, formulate the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like you said, to break through that conditioning, I mean, it's really tough, but so many times when you actually are able to point out to people how they, the things that they say, you know, that they are just basically parroting mm-hmm. the messages they've heard from their public figures, the ones they've spent a lifetime being a progressive Democrat, so, and mm-hmm. they've worked in politics, they've worked in, you know, the state Senate and these kinds of things for different politicians, and they know how it really works because, you know, their own egos seem to feed into that because they've had the experience, and mm-hmm. they don't want to relinquish the idea that they may have been fooled. And it takes so much time to be able to just point out so many of these logical inconsistencies in so many people's arguments. Eventually, maybe you can begin to break down that conditioning, like you were saying.
Well, you know, one thing people need to realize is that the political machine, and this is why they're going to try to keep out any alternatives to the two majors, as they call them,
mm-hmm.
the two-party system. It's brilliant. You divide the country in half and then pit them against each other.
It's a Hegelian dialectic.
Yes.
Yep.
You get one party in, and then they start to get everything they want, and they push it over the limit, and they get people mad. So people say, well, we're voting you out next time, so we're going to vote in the other guy. So they vote in the other guy the next time.
And the other guy's doing the same thing because the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations have told them exactly what to do.
Well, they get all their short-term agendas passed.
Oh, yeah.
And then they tick off the people again. The people say, well, we're going to vote the other guys back in. So they vote the other guys back in, and they just keep leapfrogging each other every few years and
sure.
get all of their short-term agendas passed.
That's
so
the
pretty
idea.
Soon... we're going to end up with both sides getting everything they want, and we're going to be in lockdown under national socialism.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's just it. Both parties are moving towards the exact same agenda. I mean, it's that illusion of choice, you know?
Yes.
You're using the paradigm of the Hegelian dialectic to control thought, you know? There's a great quote, it's somewhere on my website, from Noam Chomsky, where he said, you know, the smart way to keep people passive and obedient is to strictly limit the spectrum of acceptable opinion, but
mm-hmm.
allow very lively debate within that spectrum.
Even
encourage the more critical and dissident views, and that gives people the sense that there's free thinking going on.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And then he goes on, he says, all the while, you know, the time is the presuppositions of the system are being reinforced by the limits. you know, on the range of the debate. So, you know, people really believe that, you know, what they're saying is true, and yet it's all been, they've been boxed and they have blinders on and they don't even realize they're there.
And some people say we need this, we need government and this kind of thing, civilized society. But, you know, civilized people do not steal from each other, and they do not penalize people who produce and make the world a better place.
That's right.
What the nature of government is. It produces, it penalizes producers, it takes things from people, it destroys freedom, and limits what you can do as a person.
Absolutely.
That is not civilized.
It's not civilized in any way. What always cracks me up is, you know, they talk about these so-called primitive peoples around the planet, and which are all dying off, by the way, because of progress.
Kissinger.
Yeah, and Kissinger. there's so many worthless eaters, according to Kissinger.
Right,
so.
Right.
But, you know, you look at how, you know, these so-called uncivilized cultures lived. You know, here in a civilized culture like the United States, you know, people work, you know, 52 weeks out of the year so that they can get those 2 weeks off, you know, take the kids and family and see the Grand Canyon or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to these so-called primitive societies who maybe spend 5% of their time during the day performing some sort of function that will sustain their lives, and the rest of their time is spent in some sort of leisure activity, like, I don't know, playing with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in which one is more civilized than the other? It's mind-boggling when people think about, you know, we need to have, you know, this form of civilization, and it has to work a certain way. You know,
their idea of civilization and mine are two very different things.
Agreed.
And I think it's civilized for people to deal with each other on a voluntary basis and cooperate with one another
if they choose to
help each other out.
When they choose to.
Yeah, and be good neighbors to each other.
Sure.
Or not be neighbors at all. Just isolate yourself if you want to. That's the way you want to live. That's, you know, it's your business. But as long as you do not trespass against another person, whatever you want to do in your little sphere of influence is your business. And that's the way we need to live. Now, I personally believe there's an accounting for it one day. But not everybody believes as I do, and that's great. That's fine.
That's fine, yeah.
Absolutely. I accept all people's, all positions. Just don't try to force them on me.
Agreed.
Okay.
Exactly.
And that's the way I think we ought to live.
Yeah, I don't foresee any problems if we were all allowed to live that way, except, of course, for all of those elites who desire to be in control and dominate the wills of others. That'd be a kink in their plans, now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, don't force it on me, and we'll be okay. You know, mind your business, I mind mine, and we'll be okay. But it's like that song, Backed Into a Corner. Everywhere I go, you're in my face. You won't leave me alone. I seek inner peace. Still, you instigate. And I don't want to come out and smack you in the mouth, but you've given me no choice. You put me in a corner. Where else do I have to go?
Exactly.
That's what the song is about. It's resistance. It is not initiating force. None of the songs on my album are about initiating anything. It's
right.
All about self-defense. And I wanted to... That was a big theme of mine that I kept in mind. You were talking about mental censorship earlier.
Oh, right.
But it's not censorship. This is just the kind of message I wanted to convey that... revolting is not starting violence.
Exactly.
It is pushing back against something that has been pushing you.
Exactly.
It's defense.
Yeah.
So it's totally different from just going out and doing random acts of violence or whatever. You have been pushed.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with pushing back to get people off of you.
Exactly. And yeah, you know, that whole idea, you know, I would never consider that to be, you know, self-censorship. I would consider that a really thoughtful planning of audience and message. And you have the perfect blending of that on this album, my friend. You know, the music is great, the lyrics are thoughtful, timely, and the exact message that, you know, I like to send on this show. Well, it's, you know, well, coincidentally, it's 9:11 p.m., and so I'd like to thank you for joining us. I know you had planned on being here with me until 9 or so, and you've definitely put your time in, buddy, and I appreciate you joining me, and I want to play The Time Is Now on the way out at the end of the show. And you said that you love doing radio. Well, you're welcome back here anytime you want, and you have the address here in our Skype channel, so anytime you want to jump in, you join in.
Well, Jake, my friend, you know I had to go above and beyond the Call of Duty for all those nice things you said about us, man. I mean,
well, I'll tell you, like I said, you know, I don't give you know, praise lightly, and I don't just, you know, I'm not trying to blow smoke up your skirt or anything like that. This album is probably the best album I've heard in a long time.
Wow.
And it's just perfect blending of, first of all, my favorite kind of music, you know, the topics that I love to talk about. You embrace them and you touch on all of them, and we have such a meeting of the minds, I guess you would say, that you know, just this album really resonated with me, and I couldn't find enough good words to say. So there it is. Thank you for joining us, Doug.
Thank you, sir. It's been a pleasure, and hopefully we can do this again one day.
I would love to do that, and like I said, you're welcome back anytime. No need for an invite. Just jump on, man.
Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to tell people how they can find us real quick.
Oh, please do. Sorry, I actually had that here on my list of things to do. So I kind of lost track of while I was listening to your words of wisdom here. So, yeah, go ahead. Let everyone know how they can get a hold of this album and find you guys and all the business.
Well, we have a website, downcountband.com, all one word, downcountband.com, and you can hear samples of every song, the album. There's a little media player that pops up when you log into the site. There's some pictures there. There's an interview page there. We did an interview last year, end of last year. There's links to us on Pandora Radio and Amazon, ShockHound, DigiStation. Mm-hmm. We're even on IMVU, that little chat program.
Oh, right.
Site.
Mm-hmm.
So you can stream our music in the chat rooms and stuff. So
cool.
We're having a blast. I'm excited because we're talking about getting together here pretty soon and writing new material too. So hopefully we'll have another album here maybe first of next year.
Oh, fantastic.
And this is going to, I'm really thrilled because we got so many ideas and so much energy coming at this. I think it's going to be a step beyond what we've already done. So I'm really excited to hear what we come up with next time.
Oh, that I cannot wait to hear, if it's that kind of energy coming out of it, because you can just hear the synergy in this album. You guys, you know, the way you play together, it's so tight. It's such a great sound. Like I said, so, I mean, if you guys are going above and beyond that, that I got to hear.
Well, thank you, my friend. And like I said, anytime you want to hang out and chat again and talk about freedom and all that kind of warm and fuzzy stuff, I'm right there. Just give me a shout.
I certainly will. Thanks for joining us, Doug.
Take care, my friend.
All right, you too. That was Doug Kendall here with the band Downcount, singer, songwriter. On the way out of this edition of Shadow Resistance Radio, I'm going to play another song from their album called The Time Is Now. This song just kicks ass. Shadow Resistance Radio, thanks for joining, everybody.
listening to Shadow Resistance Radio. Broadcasting live on Sunday, noon to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Join the Resistance.